Hello, friends. It's spoiler in time. And by that, I mean we are going to talk about shows and spoil what happened in them so we can give you a better sense of what we thought of them. This is not Cord Killers. If you came for Cord Killers, you need to go back and find Cord Killers. That's about the devices you use, the services you use to watch things. This is what we get to do after we watch them. We get to talk about them. I'm Tom Merritt, and here to talk about it with me is Brian Brushwood.
Heck yeah. I wasn't scratching my ear just then when the camera switched over on me.
No, you were not. You were scratching your brain.
I was pointing at my temple. That also happens to be where my ear itches.
Yeah, that's the thoughts of great insight.
Oh, you know what?
Coming out of your brain.
I forgot to mention in the What We're Watching that I continue to watch episode by episode with my daughter, Voltron, and it continues to be really, really good. The one we watched this morning, season 3, episode 4 or 5. Man, it's like they're playing some fun games with that world. It's pretty great.
So the reason you forget to mention it is because to you, that's not watching television. That's the joy of fatherhood.
Yes, that's me having a tender moment with my beloved daughter.
You know who else is not a beloved daughter? Scott Johnson. And he's here to talk about shows with us, too.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that description of me. I am definitely not Brian Brushwood's daughter, although I play one on TV. I'm very excited to be here for your spoils.
Are you are you watching the Voltrons? Did you get into that?
The new one you're talking about, right?
Yeah. The one on Netflix. As a matter of fact, season 4 comes out next month.
Yeah, they've been fast and furious with those things, not to be connected with the car movie, but I watched the first season all the way through. 2 and 3 are in my queue. Just need to get to them. And I loved the first season. I thought it was great. So did my kids. That's who I watched it with. And I think it's awesome they revived this thing that I loved as a kid. I love the old ones. And so getting the new ones is
they get better. They get better once they have opportunity to subvert expectations. The first season's pretty much on rails. Second season ends with a climactic getting ready to do the thing. And then third season is just like, okay, now you know the rules. Now let's start subverting and breaking all your expectations. And it's like, whoa.
Let's make a giant robot out of smaller robots, basically.
They switch to the card Voltron.
Yeah, I love it.
All right, folks. Well, on today's episode, we are going to spoil Out of Gas from Firefly, season 2, episode 12 of Preacher, the season finale, and the episode 8 of season 3 of Rick and Morty. And we're sort of in between movie drafts because the summer is over and I won. And the winter movie draft is to happen after we get done recording Spoiler in Time. But we do have an email about the movie draft.
Email.
So I don't know how we're going to end up dealing with The Last Jedi, actually, Brian, but we've had no end of people suggesting cool ways to deal with it. The problem is, of course, that a lot of people want to own The Last Jedi in the movie draft and probably would bid $100 on it. And in the past, we made Force Awakens just automatically the first thing you bid on. And I think we did that with Rogue One as well. So the question was, are you going to do that with Last Jedi? Nickish wrote in and said, I've been running a movie league that is a copy of yours for a few years now, and I've found that nomination style works best. There's still a set list of movies, but instead of going chronologically or randomly, we have each person take turns nominating a movie to go up for auction. This usually solves the problem of having big movies sitting there at the end, or at least if it happens, it was something the group chose to do. Just a thought.
I think that's a really good way to, if your goal is to have an efficient movie draft, I think that's a fine way to do it. Our goal is to have an entertaining movie draft, which means a little bit of extra drama injected in there and some strange artifacts of either overpriced or underpriced movies. To me, that's part of the story that we're trying to tell. So I'm fine with it either way.
Part of the problem you run into, though, and I thought about this a little bit, is that is true. However, the one weird wrench in the spokes here is that there's a new Star Wars property every year for the foreseeable future. And while you might say some of that will wane over time, the next 3-4 years in a row are all going to have a winter movie draft Star Wars movie that someone could pay $100 for and win the draft.
Yeah.
Actually a couple of different people in different arenas suggested you submit 100 amount bids in advance of the draft if you want something that bad, and then those automatically become the first things in the draft open for bidding.
So basically where it's like you say these are like maybe the only way you're allowed to start taking a fractional share is if you disclose in advance any movies that you think you'll spend more than $100 on. And then the commissioner has it and they're like, okay, three people are planning, you know, they don't say who, but they say, hey, coming up first is we've got this one, and it hits 100 and then goes into fractional.
That'd and you work. Know, it's the first one because it was that 100. It was people expressed. I don't think they'd have to commit. The commissioner would have to hold them to that and say, if you tell me you're going to bid 100, you have to, one of you has to bid 100. You can't say that and then hold back. That's, I don't think that would be fair.
I agree. But regardless, I mean, there's a bunch of different. I still like the idea of splitting movies into a head and a tail. You know, opening weekend is a separate item than the rest of the
That's
run.
A very Hollywood Stock Exchange approach, because they do that in the Hollywood Stock Exchange.
We are where we are, and Justin has requested that we put Star Wars at the beginning, so we're gonna.
That's what we're gonna do.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Let's move on to talking about Rick and Morty. Scott, you watching any of these Rick and Morty Preacher?
Yeah, I'm caught up till about two episodes ago, so I'm a little behind at the moment. So the one you guys are talking about, I have not seen yet. Everyone keeps saying, they've been saying this every week, but everybody keeps saying this is maybe the best one they've ever done. And I've been hearing that since Pickle Rick. So very excited about what the last two hold for me, but I am not entirely caught up.
I will say last week's, not this week's, but last week's was better than Pickle Rick. This one, less so. This is familiar territory, and I felt like, so in this one, they do essentially the same gag as the interdimensional cable stuff, where it's like they do these little vignettes, and they're silly and so on, but they go out of their way to turn to the camera and explain, no, this is like an anthology. It's like a clip show with clips you've never seen before, and I think they were going for funny, but to me, it just read as overly defensive. Like they were trying to head off all of the Reddit comments before they were made. And as a result, it sort of weakened the episode for me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does make sense. I didn't mind it. It didn't add to the experience. Well, the first time they did it, I thought it was funny because they set up interdimensional cable. And then they said, well, hold on. We have to show you what you've forgotten, Morty. And then Rick turns and goes, that means we're not doing interdimensional cable. That made me laugh because I'm like, oh, yeah, because we all want another interdimensional cable, but we're not going to get it. Then, yeah, it became a sort of like, this is what you're getting. I'm like, OK, that's fine. It didn't take me out of it. And then halfway through the episode, it changes to a plot. And that was the twist to me. It's like, oh, okay, we're actually going to have a problem where Rick and Morty don't remember. And then that quickly turned into a vehicle of like, oh, but it's really just Morty going through all the stuff and we get the clips again. So I held out hope that they were doing something really different, which was like half the internet dimensional cable clip type approach and then actually having a storyline for the second half. In the end, it was a totally enjoyable episode. It's a throwaway episode in a lot of ways, but it was fun to see them play with a bunch of different scenarios, and I liked it.
I'll tell you what, I was surprised at what a breath of fresh air it was when Summer walked in and saved the day. I was like, thank God. I think I'm a little, I don't want to say over, I don't want to say fed up. I think I've had my fill of just Rick and Morty, and I'm really excited to see more Beth and Summer and Jerry and the rest of the cast, the characters.
Like even though we have had less Rick and Morty specific episodes this season, we had Rick and Jerry. There was Pickle Rick, which is just Rick. We've had more diversity in terms of character pairings this season.
I think what I'm filled with is, or what I'm full up with is, the tension between Rick and Morty. And even Pickle Rick was about the tension between Rick and everybody else, including Morty. And it's and there have been some really good episodes. Like last week's episode was fantastic. This week's episode was again like, oh, Rick, you do this to me, and Morty, your foibles are these. And I'm like, okay, we've been really hammering that theme for a while.
Yeah, and it's like, we get it. It's a very unhealthy, sociopathic relationship that they have, and we get it. The Mortys are disposable, although our Rick continues to try to bother to save this one and so on. But having said all that, like, I don't know. I think, like, there was something about the lazy way of Summer walking in and just coolly assessing what's going on, all while eating a popsicle like it's no big deal, biting down on the popsicle stick, cracking open the codes, yeah, reading what to do.
Mild loved surprise, all like, of that. Oh, it's a scenario four.
Yes, oh. Loved all of that. Loved all yeah. of that.
No, it was a great counterpoint. I agree. And honestly, if you think about it as, okay, they're going to have a clip show at some point, and every television series figures out, like, how can we best do a clip show? Interdimensional Cable was the best take ever on a clip show. And if they're like, well, let's not just repeat Interdimensional Cable, this was a fine and admirable attempt to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again. I'm also yeah. under the impression every time Rick and Morty seems to be going a formulaic direction, whatever that formula may be, in this case, lots of Rick and lots of Morty and forgetting about sub-character stories and that sort of thing. Is the minute I start thinking, okay, guys, dial it back, I find out that they are doing it for some reason. Like, there's mm-hmm. some weird plot twist that's going to come up and you go, oh my gosh, that's why. It happened in season one and season two for me that way on a couple of plot points, and it may happen here again. So I guess I trust that, having been through so much of this already, for them to take us in a place we least expect for this relationship we think we know. And take it in a place that's fresh and new and make us all go, oh my gosh, I can't believe they did this.
I did appreciate that they set up the color coding aspect to the crystals, all while vehemently denying that that's the case. Like, that's dumb. There's no way I'd do that. No, no. And then all the examples are like, yeah, no, that's red means this, blue means that, green means that. It was great.
Yeah. And like Rick and Morty always has, there were a ton of those little touches that were really good. It was a fine episode. Fine episode. It was good.
Agreed.
On my scale, it was a good episode.
Yeah.
Let's go to Preacher, the season finale, where Preacher gets real close to becoming the Messiah thanks to his appearance at a grade school classroom, and then leaves it all behind to save his friends. Okay, yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Kind of, to be honest, Preacher's not the star of the show anymore. The adventures of Adolf Hitler and Eugene is the star
oh, right.
of the show.
Actually, Adolf Hitler and Eugene were amazing in this particular episode because they've, as I mentioned last week, they've played the amazing trick of making you care about Adolf Hitler yes. until the point where he's like, oh, right, he's Adolf Hitler. Of course he's not trustworthy. I forgot that he was Adolf Hitler.
Well, and I did appreciate that they finally got past the forced tension of the last few episodes. I'm glad that we saw Cassidy snap with Dennis. I was done, you know, with it. It's pretty clear that, you know, Dennis isn't dead, but certainly gonna be slowed down in his, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he shows up later.
I think they could go either way on that. I mean, because they showed him burning up outside and they could say, like, nope, that's it. He burned up and he's gone. Or they could say there's a remnant of him that Cassidy could go back and resurrect. But I wondered if Cassidy wouldn't have collected him if that was the case.
Yeah. I don't know. But I'll tell you this much. It was I don't know. I can't get enough of the Hitler story. I'll tell you what, man. The action set pieces are so consistently good on this. And I think it really came home for me watching him take on the Armenians or the nationalists
or
whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was great. And it's so satisfying. And I dig that they are able to get away with cartoonish set pieces that I believe and buy the whole way.
Yeah, and they skirted very elegantly the fact that his power doesn't really work anymore,
or at least not reliably.
Yeah, and he hasn't got away cleanly with it. They're suspecting now, but you can imagine he might try to get away with it for a little while longer. I guess the only thing I'm puzzled with is at the end it seemed like, oh, okay, so he's not, well, I guess he can go back to being the Messiah, but he kind of threw it all away.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not really. Oh, here's the weird part. Not overly concerned one way or the other whether he's
yeah, that's
the
not
Messiah
really good
or not.
In a series finale. You should be like, oh, I can't wait to find out whether he's gonna do it or not.
All I care about is the adventures of Hitler and Eugene. That's all that matters.
I'm so excited to catch up. I got through a season one, and I've yet to see any of season two, but I'm stoked.
Well, there you go. You
got spoiler alert.
And Eugene to look forward.
Yeah.
It's totally fine.
Let's finish up with Firefly. Potentially, I've never formally ranked the Firefly episodes. This is potentially one of the best episodes. It's certainly one of the best crafted episodes because I always forget that you get the origin story of Firefly as well as a finely framed flashback disaster story where you just don't know the first time viewing it if Mal can actually save the Firefly or not, even though you know there's no way they're not going to have him save the Firefly. I don't know if you agree with me, Brian, but I just think this is masterfully told.
Yeah, it's so masterfully told that the structure was almost note for note, and I think I mentioned this last week. I don't want to say ripped off, but the exact same structure was used. A story in three timelines with three different color palettes, past, future, and present. In Battlestar Galactica, with a similar conceit where Starbuck is crash-landed in some place and has to fix a spaceship to get out. That's just how good this structure is. And I can't remember having seen it anywhere else before this. This also comes at a time that we are now far enough into the full season that we have a sense of all the characters. They're no longer beating us over the head about who they are, and instead making those adorable nods to who they are. You know, like that scene of the negotiation when you understand what value Jane brings to the crew and you see Malcolm recognize that and make him an offer on the spot while under, point blank range. It's delightful. And I love the fact, you know, seeing the beginning of the relationship of Wash and Zoe with the mustache and the distrust between the two of them. It's adorable and sweet and fantastic and probably the best episode in the whole series.
Well, and the flashbacks are great because of what you're saying. You get the entire courtship of Wash and Zoe right there.
Yep.
Great pilot, cheesy mustache, gives him a weird feeling, and you can just fill in the blanks. You're like, okay, knowing what I know about them now, I know exactly how that happened. And the same thing with Kaylee. You're like, oh, okay. I see where she came from. I know exactly how she fits in on this crew. I can see her progression, her growth into being indispensable here. And like you say, same for Jane, same for Inara. Inara is less of a revelation because those cards are very firmly placed on the table for you early. But it is nice to see that first interaction, see the first time she says, that's the last time you get to call me whore.
Sure, well, sure.
It's what's so great about that show in the first place is there's such a immediate recognition of the archetypes and the people that are involved. Like the characters are not hard to figure out, and then they're perfectly portrayed. You know who Mal is from the minute you see him, and then from then on, Nathan Fillion just nails it. The only downside of any of that is we don't have more seasons to flesh some of that out. But in that show, you knew, even with the weird mix-up pilot introduction, like the Ron pilot being shown because Fox didn't want to show it in order, even then, you just knew from then on, okay, these are the people I'm following. These are the people I like already. I don't even know why I like them. They're just immediately likable, and I know what their role is, and off we go. And it's, I don't know, I think it's the genius of Firefly. I love that.
And we're talking a lot about the flashbacks. The no escape scenario is great, too. Every time I watch it, I know he's going to escape, and yet I'm still tense.
Yeah, they do a good job up until, you know, it's a very forgettable ending to it where it's like, you know, oh, I've been shot, but luckily I taped this gun over here, and luckily all the five of you in my ship are so incompetent that none of you decided to cover me. I'm pointing a gun at you. Off my ship. Leave that part, you. And it's like they gave up awfully fast, and it was a bit
of a stretching. But hey, he's Malcolm Reynolds, man. He's you know, he surprised them, right?
Sure. Look, I mean, you get a lot of leeway with me.
He's pointing the gun at the captain. If he gets a shot off, he kills the captain. We're all very loyal to the captain.
I mean, they gave up awful fast is what I'm saying.
Well, I guess if I have thought about this before and I forgot until just this moment. If you're that group, you know this guy's going to die. And so you're like, you know, what's the better risk? leaving right now and waiting for him to die and then coming back, or trying to have a firefight. You might as well just leave.
Yeah. Oh,
wait for him to die. He's not going to win, right?
But instead his friends return and love.
And then their gamble doesn't pay off because Malcolm Reynolds beats the odds, which is also another unbelievable part of this. But
well, yeah, I don't know if you guys saw it real quick. Did you guys see? I know it's unrelated, but somebody mentioned BSG earlier. Ronald Moore admitted on Twitter what his favorite BSG episode was, and it turns out it's the exact same episode that we all think is the best one. So that 33 one with the clock resetting every 33 minutes.
Yeah, the very first one. Yeah,
it's his favorite. He says all-time favorite.
I'll tell you what. That was the first thing I saw of it, and it just gobsmacked me. I was just like, this is incredible. And I was and I went back and watched the mini series and was in love ever since.
Has he named his favorite episode of Outlander yet?
No, actually, I think he did. That was what he was doing because I guess the finale or something was yesterday.
No, so the premiere was 2 weeks ago.
Or
was it
the premiere? Whatever it was. There's just strings of replies from him and Sam, ask me anything or whatever. And one of them, the one that caught my eye was the BSG one, but I'm guessing there's all kinds of stuff about that show in there.
That's great.
Yeah. Well, that is it for this episode of Spoiler in Time. We are going to move along to the winter movie draft, where if you haven't heard yet, Brian Brushwood and myself are teaming up for the first time ever.
For the first time.
Now, we, of course, will not be champions. Team Cord Killers. That's Christy Cates and Malenko.
No, we're team the real Cord Killers.
Yeah, we're team champions who also host Cord Killers.
Okay, all right. Look, we'll see you guys. We're going to do the winter movie draft. Yeah, it should show up in the feed as a special event for you guys.
Yeah, it'll be in the Cord Killers feed.
Yeah.
It'll be in the Cord Killers feed. So there you go. Thanks, everybody, for watching. We'll spoil you next time. Mwah.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.